What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Social Standard Podcast. Today's guest is Justin Overman. He is the co-founder of Generalist, which is a very interesting kind of new age agency, which I'm going to let you explain because it's over my head. So what's up, Justin? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Give us the creative man's pitch on Generalists.
The creative pitch on Generalists. So I guess the first and foremost, that what actually I'm told is people will not find as interesting is Generalist is actually an agency that was, it was a consultancy founded by one of my favorite advertising people, Howard Gossage, in 1965-ish.
Yep.
He had an agency, yep, Freeman and Gossage. They did very untraditional type of advertising. Mm. And one of his things was that he got tired of, he was very honest,
sure,
with his clients and stuff. And so sometimes he would tell clients, like, you don't need advertising. That's not going to solve your problem. And then they would just go off somewhere else because there's always somebody else who would more, sure, than willing to tell them that advertising's their problem. So he got tired of losing money that way. So he teamed up with this guy named Dr. Jerry Fagan,
okay,
who was a proctologist and also a ventriloquist.
Oh.
And he was kind of like a Dr. Phil or Dr. Oz of his, okay, day. He was also like a little bit of a celebrity doctor,
okay,
and created this consultancy called Generalists, Inc. And there, Tom Wolfe, the author,
yeah, I know him,
who was friends with Gossage and Fagan and part of that, they called it the Firehouse Crew because,
okay,
Gossage's agency was in a firehouse. Tom Wolfe describes Generalists as consultants for people who are not getting what they need from specialists because what they need is the big picture. And their first client was a man who had, who owned ski lifts in Squaw Valley.
Okay.
And he wanted to make money in the summertime.
Interesting.
So it's an interesting problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to an ad agency with that problem. Where do you go with that problem?
Yeah.
He actually approached Howard originally to make ads, and Howard said that ads are not going to solve your problem. Well, what will?
Sure.
So Jerry and Howard got together, and what they ended up doing was turning the ski lodge at the top of the mountain in the summer into a 5-star restaurant with a celebrity chef that was also a discotheque at night.
Ah.
The only way to get up there was to spend $200 to get, $200 of a chairlift, which caused a lot of hoopla and a lot of interest.
How interesting.
Still exists. It's called High Camp,
huh,
in Squaw Valley. Their second client was Marshall McLuhan.
Oh.
The medium is the message. They made him famous.
Yep.
And to come full circle back, one of my co-founders for Generalists is Andrew McLuhan, which is Marshall McLuhan's grandson.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering if that was a connection.
Yes,
okay.
It is a connection. I know that you,
yeah.
commented on it.
We were chatting a little bit, yeah.
And so I thought it was kind of time to bring back,
yeah,
that idea of problem solving,
mm-hmm,
of it's not that we won't do advertising,
sure,
but it's really just every time people come to us, we just take it back to first principles.
So with that in mind, what do you think? You know, I think one of the things we had talked about initially when we were discussing this podcast was how to influence influencers, right? Like that's
right.
And that's sort of the B2B mantra, right? How do you get in and influence the people that are influencing your potential customers, your potential buyers? I mean, what's your perspective on that? And I know you sent me some stuff. I won't go into it, I'll let you share some of that, but like, mm-hmm, what is your perspective on how to do that in the right way? And we can pull it back even.
Yeah, yeah.
Too.
It's, you know, so I think the first thing, right, is to sort of establish what do most people think.
Yeah.
When I think the word influencer,
mm-hmm,
I was an influencer creator, and then there's a difference between influencer and creator, and this is all the kind of nonsense that,
sure,
I sort of fight against as a generalist, you know. you know, very recently, for example, I was asked what marketing is, the definition of marketing. And I'm like, it's best not to try to answer that question because then you're going to silo yourself. Yeah. When people think of creators or influencers, right, in traditional sense, they think of these people that have the shtick that they do online.
That's right.
Maybe it's watching trains, right? Like that one guy, or maybe whatever it is. A brand comes to them and pays them to somehow incorporate their brand into the style of what they do.
Yep.
I kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a TV channel. Imagine if you bought the ads from the TV channel rather than from, you know, an agency that put them on the TV channel. To a certain extent, it's a really good approach. Like, you know, you're going to hear me quote Howard Gossage a lot. And Howard Gossage, one of his great lines is, people don't read ads, people read what interests them, and sometimes it's an ad.
Yes.
And when you go really deep into that, what, you know, he's kind of also saying is what that means when you create advertising for a medium. It means that you shouldn't try to compete against the other ads. You should actually try to compete against the content that your ads are interrupting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the influencer approach, I think that's why it's so successful on social.
I agree.
Right? Because you are, and that's why like the low res stuff works so well. And that's why, and then each, obviously social media channel has its own style, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, TikTok, it's, you get a little bit more into storytelling, a little bit more into, right? That's the definition, right, of influencers and creators. With B2B influencers, which is kind of a new term to me, you brought it up to me, and calling me a B2B influencer kind of like
shocked me
a little bit.
Right? Yeah.
Because, you know, I wonder what that means, because what most B2B influencers, I think, do is they become influencers to share knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
In order to attract people to them and say, well, I'm not going to do that myself, and so I'll just hire you to do it, right? And but it's different. The business is actually my business.
Right.
It's not like my business isn't being an influencer. I don't make money as an influencer. Mm-hmm. If you just look at, like, you know, the influencers in the B2B world, because it's generally considered like a boring place.
Sure. Yeah. True.
So the people who kind of treat it like showmanship. Stand out more, like
Elon. You know, you're right. That's like actually Gary Vee. He's a really good showman on a lot of these things. So.
Branson,
yes.
Musk is a showman.
Oh, Musk is a huge showman. That's so true. I hadn't really considered.
So people, they should not be afraid to get out of their shell. Especially in the B2B world, because I remember when Ryan Reynolds, first got on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And he created a video, his first video. I don't think it's up anymore, but it was one of his first videos that he put up there. Or he was being interviewed by LinkedIn.
Ah, okay, interesting.
And he had his glasses on, and he sat and he talked very. He didn't talk like Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, he was in character. Because
he felt like he was, and I think it was because he's like, this is LinkedIn. This is a serious platform.
Oh, it was intentional. It wasn't like.
Like I think that's what, you know, that's what I felt. Like I had that feeling.
Yeah.
You know. And I even like wrote a comment. I'm like, dude, you could be yourself on here. You know, the only thing you really can't do on here, politics, and people aren't talking about that on here. People, you know, you're a little entertaining, a little quirky.
Yeah.
Like people will like that. And since then, he's, you know,
he's expanded.
He's let the quirkiness go on LinkedIn as well.
You know, I know that B2B is kind of they've had their playbook for a while, in terms of what works. And I'm not saying come in and throw the playbook out the window. What I'm saying is, can we tweak the playbook to be more, to be better suited for 2023 and beyond? Right? So,
I wonder, like, most influencers and content creators, like, you know, it seems like a lot of them, after they've made it, they end up, like, going to sell a course.
Yes.
On how they did it. And I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's part of the playbook or it's like they've run dry and they need to make more money, you know?
I think it's just a symptom of the fact that everyone wants to be a creator.
But I also wonder, like, if it's kind of like, you know, one of the things we talk about in general thinking is like post-rational thinking.
So it's okay. Like post-rational thinking.
Like, yeah. So it's so you come up with an idea that from a generalist perspective,
sure.
You know, like the ski lodge at mm-hmm. the top of the mountain seems obvious after the fact.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And you can definitely work back the logic mm-hmm. of how you got there, but you really can't.
No.
And so I wonder if like a lot of creators and influencers, like, if that's the same story.
I think that's a story for anyone who's had success.
Yeah.
You're successful now, so you can look back and say, oh, yeah, I know, what's the saying? Hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can say that this is how you got there. But the reality is that someone else could take that exact same strategy and they may not get to your,
yeah.
to your place. Because there's always a little bit of magic. And
yeah.
It's hard to know.
And that's the thing. The little bit of magic is you know, you just see a lot of these things and a lot of these courses. I've been hoodwinked into some of these like
sure.
sales courses and stuff like that, and it's like you pay $1,000 to do all the work, and it's like them showing like videos, and they just, and it's like, it concerns me, and it like that a lot of people will be like,
yeah, but look, I mean, people have been buying self-help books. So it's, you remember that XYZ for Dummies? Remember those books? Those yellow books
yeah.
are always in the bookstores. I feel like this has been like an approach for a long time. It's just, this is the new way that people are doing
yeah.
it, right?
But I feel like, you know, like, if I were going to go into that space and do something differently, mm-hmm. I would say it's not about these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about you
mm-hmm.
and adding pizzazz.
Yes,
and becoming
exactly.
more interesting yourself.
Finding your own magic,
and,
right?
And, yeah. and acting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to teach you acting classes.
Yeah,
like, you know, like maybe totally. like act. And so, like, so here we go. So it's like, if anybody right now is like in the acting world or whatever, here's a good business opportunity for you,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Go out and tell people that formulas are wrong. The way to become a good influencer or creator is to really just have pizzazz,
mm-hmm.
razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
And then take the formulas that everyone's using, you know, and try them all out with
sure.
your new pizzazz and see which one sticks.
Oh yeah.
And then go with it. But it really is like, I just see a lot of people, you know, taking sometimes really interesting formulas. Like they'll take my formula of
yeah.
take an assumption and go against it.
Sure.
And they'll do it in the most uninteresting way you can imagine.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did you mess that up?
Well, you know, I mean, like, everyone's sort of learning, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
no, yeah,
and so you kind of got to kind of give a little bit of, but
that's
yeah.
what my point is it, of course, yeah, I don't criticize people who don't know how to do that, but
sure.
it's like, where my brain goes is that's where the attention
yeah.
goes. And so I'll tell you, because, you know, I started, I guess, like, I'm a symptom of what I'm talking about, is I started offering ghostwriting services
yes.
for LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's not a symptom, though. That's actually a service that I think a lot of people are using.
Well, yeah,
they need it for,
so
yeah.
It's a service, and, you know, I have, like, rules, like, pretty much. So it's like, it's not like typical ghostwriting where I'm going to be capturing your voice.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to be writing, like, what you're doing interests me, so I'm going to just write it in this similar way.
Yeah. I think we even did that. I think I sent you something. You're
right.
Like, this was good, but here's how I would have done it. And I actually took my post down and put yours back up, and it
right.
was trending a lot better.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
It did. Well, so then that, you know, made me think, like, ghostwriting, but like coach writing.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, send me your post for the week.
Sure.
And we'll sit there. We'll talk about it. I'll
yeah.
say, you buried the lead here. And you'll learn more. It's like that give
yes.
a man a fish.
Yes.
You're right? Like,
yep.
ghostwriting, I'm just going to give you a fish. But if I teach you how to fish.
Yeah, then you're better.
And my goal would actually be, in a very Howard Gossage type of way, my
sure.
goal would be that you don't need me anymore.
Right.
His whole thing was like, the more successful the advertising, the less you should spend on it.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it, that makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, in the same way, like, the more I coach you on writing, to get to the point where you don't need me anymore.
Right.
You know, and that's why I charge so much up front, because,
see, that's,
you know,
a good,
yeah, so,
that's a good thought.
So I just think that, like, people should be paying more attention to that part of it, and not so much on the formula, the
mm-hmm.
the video has to have something fast happening in the beginning, and
definitely.
Like all that stuff you learn and you figure out, like, you figure that out once, because even if you make a video the wrong way,
sure.
if you have personality, it'll
Yeah, it'll get yeah. pretty far. So you're getting the majority here, and then the next.
Then you'll just learn how you'll start. Then you start getting more interesting in how to enhance that. And
exactly.
So I think people maybe it's like that. People have it backwards.
Yeah. And this people have no patience too. It's like you want to, you know, when you start, you want to see success right away. You want to go viral. You want to do all these things, right? Yeah. I see that with B2C and B2B, everybody. But the reality AI. Is it's you know, B2B marketing is a long game. It's also a long game to become a B2B influencer.
Yes.
And so I think that those two things mirror each other really, really well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting world. and I do think, you know, I do think B2B stuff is, like I said, I think it's coming for, you know, the big screen, if you will. And it's going to be fun times. And I think it's going to be a boon for B2B marketers. I'm really excited about the shift because I think that they have not been able to experience some of the things that B2C has been. And I think that this is going to be, I do think it's going to move the needle in pretty exceptional ways for a lot of B2B businesses.
For some reason, when you were saying that, what went on in my head was, I did this post a while ago, but there's all this stuff about how everyone's saying that people don't like advertising anymore. Mm. They just want, and they refer to like the influencer and the content creator stuff as not advertising. And again, this is the type of segmentation that I don't like to, that I don't believe in. As a generalist, you know, like, what's the point of trying to segment? Just solve the problem. But what I find interesting about that comment is that I guess from targeting or whatever, when I go on Instagram, the only ads I see, pretty much, are ads of people trying to sell me their course, and it's usually millennials and Gen Z people. Mm-hmm. Selling me, you know, to get more sales or to learn about drop shipping or like the worst kind of back page magazine stuff that you can, like, that's what the internet has become to a certain extent. Yeah. It's like what you say, it sounds like an ad.
Yeah.
You know, but that's all I see. And so it must be working, right? There's no reason why it wouldn't work because the stuff that they say, I could imagine it capturing a very vulnerable thing, person. Like if my sales are down, if I'm out of money and whatever. But what I find ironic is that the same people who, I mean, I once saw an ad from a person selling me their course about how advertising's dead.
Oh, that's funny.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And
which are advertising, right? And so
using the like cleanest form of direct response, formulaic stuff, the hook, the this, the that. Like I went back and I watched that ad multiple times and I dissected it and I'm like, this is a play out of like, not just like Claude Hopkins, like 1920s direct marketing, like this guy took a Dan Kennedy course, you know, Dan Kennedy?
No.
Like he's like the most popular, like Russell Brunson, you know, like,
interesting.
Like you know, and he's telling me that advertising's dead. That's weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
It's ironic.
It's ironic, and it's a weird world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have influencers and content creators that are just almost taking a play out of the 1960s advertising revolution and doing it for social.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, this is something I've thought about in the past 2 days because there's been a lot of discussion on LinkedIn about creativity is dead in advertising. And they blame clients. And oh, this was the conversation that came up about Adobe with somebody. And I said, oh, you know, actually I saw a influencer campaign that was really highly creative, you know, really impressed me. Like really, you know, it was what it was in the, in the influencer world, but it was like creative and interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that the problem is not that clients don't recommend creativity anymore. I don't know who to peg this problem on, but it occurred to me, I was swiping through and I came up to, it was on Instagram and it said, wait for it. And then there was like a lion or like this had me on the floor and it was like a lion going like this. And it was like, and then it went to roar, but the person dubbed out the roar and just had a person going, woo-hoo! You know, this lion had like a beautiful mane.
Yeah.
Like just like it looked like a shampoo commercial.
Oh, nice.
And so it was like, woohoo, woohoo. Right. And I watched that whole thing. And the first thing in my ad brain went off was, oh, this would be a great shampoo commercial. Like if this was a shampoo commercial 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Gone viral. Like a gorilla playing the drums to Phil Collins. The problem is that advertising hasn't become more creative. The problem is that we've all become more creative.
So
it's democratized.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to work in an ad agency anymore to be that creative. So therefore, remember what I said before about like how if you are going to do paid advertising, uh-huh. it has to be more interesting and more creative,
sure,
I guess, than the content that's on the social platform.
Surrounding it, yeah.
Well, on TikTok, that's damn difficult.
It is, yeah, because people are very creative. You're right.
I haven't worked in an ad agency for 3 years.
Sure.
And TikTok was just getting started around then. I wouldn't want to be an ad creative starting out in advertising today.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think a lot of brands and a lot of companies are hiring creators to do this stuff because they speak the language and they're really good at it.
They're really good at it. Yeah. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge for brands, and that's why, you know, little plug for you, that's why they got to go to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's mm-hmm. why they that you know, because you can't do that on your own, and you can't it's scary. It is a scary thing.
Yeah.
Because you're not competing with
you're competing with millions of people now, right?
Yeah, you're competing with people doing funny videos and mm-hmm. and doing weird things, and you're competing with the girl that you likes, you know, pictures, and you're competing with your ex's pictures, yep. and you're competing with what your best friend just posted,
sure.
and you're competing like so much.
Yeah.
But even more so, you're competing with crazy. It's almost an overload of creativity.
I think that's why, like, you know, and just to shift gears a little bit to B2C,
sure.
I think that's one of the reasons that what we see on TikTok, is brands and people really showing up in the comments. And where brands are really winning is they'll post something funny and they get in with the comments too, or they can comment on a creator's video. They mm-hmm. can comment something funny, almost like a brand would have done, you know, 7 years ago on Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. They come in with, you know, Oreo taking on the Super Bowl, the dunk in the dark, right? Like a line like that, they can come in and jump on a different trend. And we've seen that with the skateboarding guy, the Fleetwood Mac with Ocean Spray, right? Like we saw that, like a brand jumps into a moment. The brand didn't need to be creative.
Yes.
For that ad, the ad was created for them. They just needed to lean into the movement.
Into the moment. And that's what Ryan Reynolds does with his fast advertising.
That's right.
And that's what, you know, the origin of this. Actually, the guy who invented the term interactive advertising. Interactive advertising doesn't mean like no one wants to talk to soap.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like you don't want to have a conversation with soap.
Yeah.
That's not what interactive, and it doesn't even click on a banner, and that's not what interactive advertising means. Like the guy, Howard Gossage was the guy.
Yeah.
He actually invented interactive advertising in the 60s with coupons.
Oh.
What he would do is he would create an ad, like one of them was for Eagle Shirts manufacturers.
Okay.
They're the ones that made all the men's shirts that then like Neiman Marcus would say are their own.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
And so they wanted to make sure that people knew that Eagle Shirts existed, and in a way that they were like, they're the providers for all of these things. So, because they maybe were going to start selling their own shirts or whatever. So what Howard Gossage did is he created an ad with a picture of like one of the most popular shirts that are sold through the stores. And it just said, is this your shirt? If it is, send us a coupon and we'll send you an Eagle Shirt label so you could sell it in yourself.
Oh, that's funny.
Right? Or he had another one where he invented like a pocket, like a sample fabric that had a pocket on it and a button, and then he's like a shirkerchief, like the headline was like shirkerchief napchief, what should we call this and what would you use it for, and then people would write in.
Yes.
And so many people wrote in that they that he published a book about it.
Isn't that the same thing with Betty Crocker?
Where
they started, that's the character of Betty Crocker and why she was created, humanized that brand. And then she had a column and then people would write into her, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. A column and he did this for FINA gas stations where he realized that nobody cares about gas.
Sure.
Like what is in the gas. So he invented this campaign. We invented pink air for tires. And we want to send you a free sample of the pink air. And of course, we can't send you a sample. So we have it's a pink balloon within a pink balloon. And we'll send you one for each one of your kids that you have. By the way, how many do you have? The real purpose of that ad. The real purpose of that ad is to find out where the families live so that they can put the gas stations there. Saved millions of dollars.
How interesting. And
got tons of free publicity. So he would use coupons and actually prevented the flooding of the Grand Canyon from Congress using this strategy.
Really?
He did a lot of things. So
how do you prevent the flooding of the Grand Canyon?
So they were going to flood the Grand Canyon for whatever reason, like a certain part of it. And someone in Congress said, well, the people are going to like it because they can get closer to the walls. And then one of the people responded to that. I was like, should we flood the Sistine Chapel? So that people can get closer to the ceiling. And so that became the headline. And it was this whole article. And then in the coupon, he had 10 coupons in this thing that were addressed to the President of the United States, the Vice President, the Senator, whatever. And they got flooded with so much mail. And Gerrymander, who is Howard Gossage's partner, he just recently passed away. But very recently, he was being interviewed about it. And he's like, he said he doesn't understand why brands still don't do this today.
Yeah.
Because it means nothing to like a tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Like a million likes on a tweet, it's bots, it's this, it's nothing. But if you could get 300 people to actually take the time to print something out, maybe not cut it out,
yeah.
print something out, mail it, stamp it, those 300 things is going to be far more effective, right, than
just a tweet that you're like. Then
the tweet.
Sure.
That's what real interactivity is, right?
It's that's
like it's not just so much getting people to write, but do something, right? And giving somebody recourse, right? To get more involved.
Well, and that's I think a big reason why TikTok has had gained so much popularity because you have the trends. It's like here, do this dance. Like when Charli D'Amelio was like the shining star, and she was doing all these dances, and you would try to do the dances too. Jump on this trend. It's just participation.
It's communication.
It's the same as ice bucket challenges from yesteryear, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All of that stuff. Yeah.
Now you mentioned Betty Crocker, which is really interesting because it just reminded me of something else. Because Betty Crocker, You ever hear that story? So their instant cake mix.
Yes, yes. You mentioned that to me. That was a really cool one. Yeah.
So repeat it again. So it's somewhat a famous story about how Betty Crocker with the cake mix, and nobody was buying it because it was too instant.
Mm-hmm. Even though people said that they were interested.
In that product, and they would, but nobody was buying it, and so then they did these studies. Instead of hiring the poll people, the Gallup poll people, the analytical people, they had a psychologist. Now it wasn't Edward Bernays, but it was like the next level. Edward Bernays is the guy who invented PR.
Okay.
I'll get back to him in a second, but it was Dichter.
Okay.
I forget his first name, and he had this motivational lab, and his main thing was finding out like the deep psychological reasons of why people buy things,
which is usually
counterintuitive to what you would think.
Sure.
And in this case, it was, the housewives at the time, liked the idea of instant cooking, but it also made them feel a little guilty.
Guilty. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not, and that's a human nature. We want to be involved in what kind of we're doing. Want to feel kind of proud, especially with something baking and cooking for your family, mm-hmm. your husband. So his advice was that they should add in the instructions, just add 2 eggs. And then in the ad, it was also add an egg. And they did that, and then the sales went, through the roof.
Yeah, right? it's very telling, right? When you say people say one thing and they want it, but will they do it because is it accepted?
Yeah.
But I think that's also what we're seeing in this recommendation algorithms, right? They say they want to see this stuff, and probably they do, but what they actually end up watching is cat videos.
Right.
Whatever. So, right. So now all of a sudden you're getting served all of this content that you actually, maybe you don't want to see it, but you're enjoying it. And so you go, like, your behaviors, you're saying one thing, your behavior is going another way.
Right.
And that's why these recommendation algorithms have been so insanely successful.
Successful. Also,
if success, if by success, we're defining that as capturing attention.
Right. But also I think this has detrimental effects in the sense that,
1,000%. Yeah.
You know, cause what people really want is new.
Is new.
Yes. They don't want new to happen to them. You use the same thing over and over again. And like I think you're seeing Gen Z is now stepping in and saying, and you know, certain types of content and whatever is boring and cliche, and mm-hmm. an entire generation that if you say what Hogwarts house you are, it's like eye rolling. You know what I mean? So it a lot of, you know, and that's just, you know, human nature. But what's really interesting about the Betty Crocker example, mm-hmm. and with the influencer stuff,
sure.
if I can just go back to it for a second, is, so go back to Edward Bernays, uh-huh. who's the guy who invented PR.
Yeah.
And Addictor was applying it to advertising, but it's very much like a PR aspect of advertising, is that what Edward Bernays figured out was that there are certain times when if you want to influence people to do something, buy something, not in a bad way, or in a bad way,
sure.
but if you want to influence people to, and I mean this in a bad way, Goebbels said he was very influenced by Edward Bernays' book,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic because Edward Bernays was Jewish and a nephew of Freud. But but that just shows how powerful what Edward Bernays discovered was that, you know, this is a horrible example, but cigarette companies, you know the story, the cigarette companies, they were losing money because half the human population didn't smoke.
Right.
Women didn't smoke. It was, and not only did they not smoke, but if they were seen smoking in public,
mm-hmm.
big faux pas.
Big, really?
No-no.
Okay.
Right? A woman smoking, it was the men smoked.
Okay.
That's a lot of revenue lost for cigarette companies. So they went to Edward Bernays and says, how can we get women to start smoking?
Mm.
So what Edward Bernays did was, is he what was happening at the time was women's rights to vote.
Sure.
This was based off of your comment,
yeah.
right, about tapping into the what's going on in the world. And so he hired a bunch of female influencers, society women,
sure.
to Thanksgiving Day parade, to march down. They were marching down, and that they would all simultaneously take a cigarette and light up and walk down.
Oh, how
and
interesting.
They called them torches of freedom. So what he did was is he turned cigarette smoking into an anti-masculine,
right.
You know, we have the phallic object too, mm-hmm. type of rebellious act. So he didn't try to persuade anybody with advertising. Instead, he created the environment in which that could exist.
Huh.
The other example is like he was asked to sell more pianos by Steinway mm-hmm. or something. Now there are a lot of famous great piano advertisements that worked and sold a lot of pianos. Something The Immortals by Rubicam. There are a lot of these. What he did, but none of that was working anymore for whatever reason. So
sure.
what he did was, now here's an example that sometimes influencing the influencers doesn't mean influencing the influencers that are directly involved with your product. So
sure.
you would think if I went to just like some hokey, you know, influencer firm and said, I want to sell more pianos.
Right.
So you'd think, okay, well, I'm going to go get music influencers
mm-hmm.
to say, I make music on this piano.
Right. Well, you have to expand beyond your core market, right?
Right.
Then you need someone new. Mm-hmm.
But here's what I really mean by influencing the influencers.
Okay.
What he did instead was he went to the people. This happened when the suburbs were popping up.
Okay.
So what he did was he went to the people who were building homes in the suburbs and said, you know, people are leaving the city. and they have this dreams of this idyllic homes. And I think that every home should have a music room. Mm. So he got the contractors to, he influenced the home builders to build music rooms into the homes in the suburbs, living rooms, right?
Yeah.
And, but call them music rooms. Now, what does every music room need?
A piano. Yeah.
So you're going to move into this house, you're going to get a piano.
Interesting.
And then they were hit with a direct mail about a piano. Piano, yeah, for your music room.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by influencing the influencers. And then what you're also doing is, sure, you're, instead of forcing a message down people's throat, you're creating the space where people just don't even realize. It's a little shady when you think about it, but it's like,
yeah,
you know, people don't even realize how much they've been manipulated into, sure, into thinking, you know, into buying that product or doing it. And I think that could be a really interesting way of using B2B influencers, right? Where it's like, I don't even know where I'm being played.
Right.
You know?
Well, none of us do at the end of the day. I mean, I'm in this space with, you know, it's like both of us, and it's like we're still susceptible to advertising. That's just the
persuasion.
Way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Persuasion. Exactly. And that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's like, but influencers are a medium of persuasion. Mm-hmm. And as long as it is done in an authentic way, it will likely be very successful.
Yeah. That's actually why I also tell aspiring copywriters and advertising creatives, I say, you can have a swipe deck.
Sure.
You know, ads that you like or mm-hmm. influence for whatever. But more importantly, you need to have a wallet deck.
Hmm.
And that is you need to keep track of the ads that actually made you buy something.
Yes.
More than anything.
Yeah.
And I think you know, that would be kind of an interesting thing for influencers and content creators to do as well.
Yeah.
To keep track of, it's a hard thing to admit, mm-hmm. but if you consciously keep track and if you admit to yourself, like, this influencer post actually
made absolutely. Me do that. I do that all the time because that's a strategy then that I use to inform our clients on ways that I think will be successful for, you know, for them.
You should do that with your team. You should have a part on your website.
You're right, we should.
That says, whether we created these posts or not,
these were influential, and here's why.
It's kind of like, you know, when like at Blockbuster, I remember it'd be like, here are the movies, you know, Jane is watching.
Oh,
you know, recommends, and it's sort of like that. Each person that works there, it's like they bought maybe there's some things they don't want to admit that they bought, but it's like, you know, like I bought this, you know, this influencer post influenced me to buy this, and that's like an extremely valuable service.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah, those are good thoughts.
And it's more than just the data. You actually get like see it, and you can
totally. That's a really good practice that I think would be good for both B2B and B2C. Mm. Just to kind of take note and see, and we do that a lot. You know, I have in my notes file. I don't have a Remarkable, but I do have my Apple Notes that I use a lot. And I do save down LinkedIn posts that I think are interesting, like formats and things that people have done that I find interesting that I want to try myself. And so it's really kind of all about. I think it's all about just being a consumer in the space, observing what is working, what is interesting, what inspires you, and then applying that to your own brand, your own voice, right?
100%.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great conversation.
Yeah. yeah. It's very fun.
Thank you for joining. I think, you know, a lot of good insights for our audience, and I think it's nice to take a generalist approach to things every once in a while and kind of realize that, you know, even though we are in the influencer marketing business, everyone who listens to this podcast is interested in influencer marketing. Let's not forget that it is a part of the overall pie of advertising, and there are things that we can and should be remembering and learning and experiencing so that we can only improve the work that we do in the influencer space.
Yeah. And I would say, I would add to that, you know, one of the things we do, right, is we like to, no matter what problem you come with, we take a step back and we say, is that really the thing? But a lot of times it's insistent. So if you're insistent, or if, you know, you have someone that's insistent that says, no, we're going to use influencers.
Yep.
That's fine. But then realize that that's become your problem now. Your problem now is that you need to achieve this goal only using this tool.
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of, now it's like you're MacGyver.
Yeah.
Right. So it could be really, it's possible.
You know, right? Gen Z has no idea who MacGyver is, right?
Yeah. Well, look it up, Google it, or, yeah, exactly. Or ask ChatGPT or whatever. But you know, now you have these two tools.
Yeah.
And the first, so my advice would be, my generalist advice is, okay, come up with the first right answer. Of okay, right? I'm selling pianos. I need to hire influencers. I'm going to get musicians, right? Now I challenge you to come up with 100 more right answers.
Right.
Because when the first five are going to be easy, mm-hmm. but 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 88, 99,
yeah.
That's when you're going to have to start pushing your brain, and that's when you're going to get like, oh, what if I got builders to build
right.
houses, you know, and so maybe I should start creating influencer content for them, mm-hmm. and it's a longer-term play, but
totally.
You just start thinking that way, and it'll lead to good things.
I agree. Good thoughts.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. This
no
is
problem.
Super fun.
I had so much fun.
And yeah, I hope to continue the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.